Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our guest is the amazing Claire Sullentrop. I hope I got it right.
You nailed it.
She's the founder of All of Your Customers and also employee number two and director of marketing previously at Calendly, who grew to enormous size. And I love your marketing work, Claire. This episode is brought to you by Tiny Reminder. Tired of nagging people? Build a simple form, set a reminder schedule, and add recipients. We'll keep sending reminders until they submit a response. This tool is forever free. Sign up today at tinyreminder.com. Thank you for making it today.
Jane, I am so flattered at that. So thank you for having me on the show. As a longtime listener, it's cool to be here.
Amazing. So we'll get started with a questionnaire. And question number one is, what do you do for a living now that you're out of Calendly?
Sure. So I've actually struggled to answer this question because it's hard to find one word. I think the easiest way to describe it would be to say that I am a product marketer, which means that I focus on the people who are already on your landing pages or your website or inside your app. And I work on figuring out what's happening with those people and what they're thinking and how we can keep them there and keep them moving through the funnel. So it actually plays in very closely with, analyzing UX and making sure that things are clear and people know what to do next. Does that maybe sum it up a little bit?
Absolutely. How does that translate into actual, consulting formats? Do you do hands-on work? Do you just talk to people online? What do you do exactly?
That's also a very good question. So I live on both sides of the house. I work on the strategy side, and also I work on the execution. So typically what I will do with a client is look at a piece of their marketing funnel or their app where conversions are not as high as they need to be. So let's pretend that someone has a landing page that they have built and traffic is coming to it, but not very many people are going from the landing page into the app. Let's pretend that that's what's happening. So what I would do for that client is actually speak with and research their customer base. And so that would be some deep interviews with a number of their best customers. It would be researching online what kind of people use their app and what those people's problems are and what stresses them out, what they're trying to do. And I would use this very deep dive customer research to completely rewrite the landing page with a little bit of advice on here's how we can also change the design, but primarily I am much more of a writer than a designer. And we would refocus the page on the messages that the client's target audience really is looking for and needs to hear to convince them, yes, this is exactly what I've been waiting for. Get me into the app. So it's a combination of customer research, figuring out what people's real needs are or jobs to be done are. And I know that in some past podcasts, you've talked about jobs to be done, which we could dive into here. But what I'm figuring out really, I guess, is what are your users' jobs to be done and how can we rewrite this landing page or the messaging inside your app to really let users know that this app will do the job that you need done. And then we test those pages or we test that messaging and we see, are we bringing in more customers? Are we bringing in more signups? So you could compare me to a couple of your past podcast guests. You could compare me to conversion copywriters. You could compare me to customer insight analysts. I do a little bit of all of those things, that's why I've struggled to say, here is my one job title. I'm still working on that.
Okay. Now tell us a bit, how did you get there?
Yeah.
Your story.
Also a good question. So as you mentioned, I was the number two employee at Calendly. And I actually remember when you interviewed Tope, our CEO. So it's funny to be here speaking with you about this. So when I joined the team, it was just Tope at that time. And my role was going to be getting lots and lots of new eyeballs to the Calendly website and getting people into the app. But what we found, which I think you may have discussed on that episode, is that because the app has a viral component, you cannot use it in a vacuum. Every user exposes it to a new person. We actually, in the early days, didn't have a lot of trouble getting people to sign up. So because of that, I didn't end up focusing on what I thought I would focus on. What I actually focused on was all of these new people who were pouring into the product. And my new job became figuring out how do we get all those people to stay around. So that's what led me to learn so much about and do so much deep customer research. It's what led me to learn so much more about how can you rewrite pages or onboarding emails or anything within the product to make it clearer for people to understand and keep them there. How do you write knowledge base articles that help people solve the problems that they're having? So as Calendly has grown, what they need is someone who wants to really build out a big marketing department. That's the stage that they're at. But I so love the on the ground, deep in the weeds, working with your customers type of work. That I knew I wanted to keep doing that with clients. And in my time there, I had seen other startups, you know, falter because they didn't have someone doing that work for them. And so I thought, you know what? People need this. I have seen that people need this, and I'm going to be the one to do it, and I'm going to teach people how to do it. So that is how I have transitioned out of Calendly and into working one-on-one with clients.
Well, I have no doubt that your work is super useful. In being a founder myself, I do understand how scary it is to get in touch with customers directly and to talk to them. really is a big, painful thing for founders to do, especially considering the fact that most of them are developers by trade, which means even more introverted than designers myself. Can you give us like a couple facts, what you did before Calendly and how you landed there?
Absolutely.
Maybe your college, or what did you do before?
Mm-hmm. So I am happy to. And it's funny. So I understand that it was your birthday this weekend. And as I mentioned, happy birthday. So I was reading the blog post you wrote about your story. And in reading that, I noticed, wow, she, you know, her career jumped all over the place. She did so many different things. And my story is a little bit similar. So I do not come from a software background. I went to college thinking maybe I would go into journalism. And writing has always been a part of my work. But instead, I actually went into radio. And it's very, very different. But I was working for my university's radio station and fell in love with the world of radio. And so my first job out of college was actually working at an agency for record labels and for musicians. And so what our agency did was take new records and get those records written about in magazines and played on radio stations. And so I worked in their radio department. My job title was that I was in marketing, but it wasn't so much marketing as it was sales. I had to form a lot of relationships with people who worked at radio stations across the country and get them to play these records. So that was really fun, but it wasn't the type of work that I loved doing. Because I so much love the process I've always enjoyed building things on the internet. Whether that was as a teenager, you know, blogs or really, really small dinky websites. And I kind of, I missed that. I missed that when I was doing work with this agency. And so I took a break from my life and I did something completely unrelated after this. I taught English in China for about a year while I was trying to figure out what will I do next. So you're probably thinking none of this has to do with software. But while I had been working at this agency, I had started a blog, and I called the blog Eat Well, Party Hard, because the lifestyle of working in music is very, very stressful and not healthy. So you are at concerts all night, and you are at the office all day, and you never really have time to eat well or get much sleep. And so my blog was about how can you be healthy and take care of yourself in this very difficult lifestyle.
And is it still up? Is it still up?
I have taken it down.
I was going to link to it in the show notes.
I have taken it down. You can find it probably somewhere on Tumblr, but the real domain, the domain name that I bought has expired. So with that said, when I moved to China, I kept writing on this blog, except now I was writing about how can you be healthy and eat well when you travel. And the blog was my little sandbox. So I wrote an ebook and I sold it through the blog and I made a little bit of money and I was like, wow, this is so fun. And I did, you know, I held interviews with people who were well known in the healthy food industry, and I thought that was really fun. And I got a taste of what it was like to build an audience, even if it was small, and sell something. And have people that I had never met buy it from me. And through that, I actually started doing a little bit of nutrition consulting. And so I had a small handful of clients in the U.S. who needed help learning to eat better. And I needed a scheduling tool because I was in China. and so I found Calendly from a Google search when it was still in beta. So I was using this amazing free product, and I received one of the first onboarding emails that new users got at that time. And it was signed from Tope, the CEO, but I didn't know that at the time. You know, for all I knew, it was, you know, someone who worked in customer support. I didn't know anything about the product. And the email asked a very generic question, like, do you need help? Or if you need help, respond to this email. And so I replied to the email and I said, you know, great product. I have some questions. Some things are confusing me. And I thought that I would never hear back from anyone. But Tope responded to me within a couple of hours and he answered my question and it was very personal. And I was like, wow, someone is behind this product, you know, because when you're on the internet, you have no idea what's happening on the other side of things. And, that really surprised me. And so I responded back and we kind of started a conversation. And he was asking me why am I using the product? What am I using it for? You know, he was doing some customer research himself because I was a beta user, which I didn't know. And, we struck up a conversation by email that way. And so he actually subscribed to my newsletter, through that conversation. And so over the next several months, he saw how I write and how I, you know, if I have a point to make, how I use a story to make the point and how I drive people to action through emails and through blog posts and on landing pages. And so he...
Let me interrupt you for a second.
Yeah,
here's a
yeah.
quote from your homepage. The way Claire writes pulls you in. It feels like a two-way conversation. Tope Owatonna, Calendly CEO. It feels great.
He very kindly said that about the writing that I do or the work that I do. And so when I got back to the United States, he reached out to me and he said, this may sound crazy, but Calendly needs a director of marketing and I would love for you to apply. And I was just like, what? Oh. so I did. I, you know, we met for a Skype call and I wanted to learn about the business and what is the plan for it, and you know, tell me all of, like, there's so much you have to understand before you join a small startup, right? I mean, it's a risk, and through our conversations, you know, it appeared that Tope had a very, very strong direction that he wanted to take this product in, and it was a very exciting opportunity. And so I jumped, and that's what brought me into Calendly in the first place. So all that said, I was in maybe journalism, then radio, then teaching, then my own tiny form of internet marketing, before I actually hit the software world. So it's been a very, very non-linear journey to get here.
I think there is that concept. I don't know how to pronounce it right. Something like parlay, or it's a term from cards. When you leverage your existing skills and you transfer to another industry leveraging the skills.
Right.
Like, there is an example that none of U.S. presidents were actually politicians. Most of them were either from military or like university direct. So they all transferred from different industry, and that's exactly what you did.
Right, you parlay those skills into a totally new role.
Right, exactly. So, what does a typical day look like?
Sure. So, it depends on the day, but 2 days a week are devoted completely to clients. And so if I'm working with a client in the way that I've described, half of the project is typically very, very deep customer research. So I am speaking with their customers about what was happening in that customer's world before they knew about the product and what drove them to look for something like the product. And when they found it, what convinced them that this was the right thing for them, and what were they scared of? And what I'm doing when I'm speaking with clients is almost trying to create a little documentary of what was happening in their life that led them there. So that's half of the work that I'm doing. And then once I've collected a good amount of research, then I'm distilling all of that research to find patterns. And then I'm using those patterns to recraft either copy on a landing page or within an email sequence or within, you know, the stages of an onboarding flow so that we can make those things stronger and appeal to more people. So that is a lot of the work that I'm doing. And then I'm working directly with the clients to present that work and saying, here's what we have found about your users, and here's how we can change things. And here's what I suggest that we test to see if we can convert more people to get through this stage of the funnel. And then the other 2 days a week, I'm writing about how to do this, and I'm putting together, I actually mentioned to you, I'm putting together a book to, you know, teach DIY founders how to do this exact process, because sometimes it is hard to hire someone to do it for you. And I'm working on other ways to share the customer research process with the world. For example, I will be speaking at the Unbounce CTA conference in June. So if anyone is in Vancouver and wants to meet up, let me know. But yeah, 2 days a week are devoted to clients. 2 days a week are devoted to writing about customer research and product marketing and developing content around that. And so that is, I guess that is the best way to describe the balance of my week.
Right. What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
What I enjoy the most is really digging into what's happening in users' worlds. Because when you are building something, and I know you know this because you know, I'm sure it was the same way with Tiny Reminder. When you're building something, you're so close to it and you have all this knowledge in your head, and it's so hard to unlearn that knowledge and to go see what new users are experiencing. So it's almost like being a detective trying to find for what that experience looks like to your users. I find that really fascinating. And I also think it's really, really fun because you can weave these people's experiences into a story about who your ideal user is and what's happening in their world and what they need to hear from you. So I think that entire process, I love it so much, and I think it appeals to the journalist in me who's always looking for a story to write about. What do I like the least? There's a big struggle when you're working with someone who's so passionate about their product, and that struggle is that person, the person who built the product, also wants to tell a story, and so it can be very difficult to help a founder understand that their story is only so important. It's not that important in the end. What's really important is the user story and telling that story on your website and within your product. And so those conversations can be very hard because typically when I'm working with a founder or an early stage team, I'm working with people who are very passionate about what they've built. And so it can be hard for them to let go of what they want to say in order to better appeal to their audience. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Resonates with me a lot.
It's hard.
Yes, it's absolutely, absolutely hard. And as a designer, I work with other founders and I experience similar things. Not that it's bad. It's just a natural trait.
Right.
And on the other hand, they're paying us money to build something opinionated because there is such thing when you kind of dictate, like Steve Jobs.
Right.
And such. Like, we can dictate user patterns other than asking and researching them for. So, yeah, and we all hope we're going to be building opinionated software, not the one that is grounded in research. But it, life shows that it's the other way. Right.
Absolutely.
What is your next big thing?
So I mentioned it briefly, but upcoming, the next big thing is actually a short book, and it'll be, I don't have a sexy title for it yet. It's just called Websites That Convert. Very unsexy. But the book is designed to help DIY founders solve a problem that they may not be able to pay someone to solve for them. And that problem is, I have built something that I know is so great, and I know it's going to change people's lives. But because I'm not a marketer, and because I'm not a writer, I struggle to get people to care about it as much as I do. That is the problem that I have seen with so many founders that I know personally. And it's also the problem that I've seen across so many different forums. Bootstrapped, you know, the Bootstrapped forum, Indie Hackers, Reddit. I see so many people who've built something struggle to get people to care. And so this book is a very, very... It's the very basic foundation of how to plan the content that will be on your website and how to do some of that customer research that helps you write really, really good, high-converting website copy. So that is the very next thing. Similar to how you have the UI audit, which helps people who cannot afford to work with you directly, I would like to have that available for people. So that is the next project. And then after that, what I would love to do is build more robust resources to help people do this themselves. So maybe that'll be a course. Maybe it'll be a small group of, you know, founders or early stage teams who need this help, but they can't afford it one-on-one, but they can afford it in a group setting. It's hard to say exactly what will happen after the book because life throws weird things at you. But those are some of the things that I'm considering.
That sounds great. I'm looking forward to reading the book.
Yeah.
Sounds really awesome.
I'm so happy to share it with you. I'm sure we can talk about this later, I don't want to be like, buy my stuff at all. But if it's something that sounds useful, you know, the best way to find it is to go to loveyourcustomers.co and jump on my list, because that's where I'll be sharing updates about it as I finish it.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to it. Now that we're done with the basic questions, I don't So my initial topic for this conversation was product development and growth, because you definitely have a take on both. But now I think I should just get your opinion on a bunch of things and just learn how you think they should be done should you start your own SaaS sort of thing. And let me read it up. So I have I want to know your take on landing pages, on onboarding, on how to gain the very initial traction, how to do growth down the road when you're already like somewhat rolling up, and of course I'd love to learn about your customer interview technique. Maybe we should start with that one.
Sure. Pick your favorite one. We can start there.
Customer research 101. Describe your research method in 3 sentences.
Ooh, in 3 sentences.
Maybe more.
It's good that you force me to not ramble.
I'm just afraid we're not going to cover all the topics. So I just really want to hear your take on them.
Claire, hurry up. Let's see. Okay. So in 3 sentences, it would be ask open-ended questions. Ask indirect questions. And by indirect, I mean, instead of why did you buy this product? Because if you ask someone that, they will tell you the reasons that they told themselves, but those can be different actually. Indirect would be what was happening in your world that caused you to look for something like this. Because that forces the person to tell you the problems instead of what was going on in their head. So, ask open-ended questions, avoid yes or no, ask indirect questions. And then I think the another good sentence to add is, allow time for awkward pauses because we are all, especially if we're not comfortable interviewing someone, we all tend to try to talk to fill the silence. And when you, as an interviewer, try to fill the silence, you miss out on some of the things that your customer could have told you that you won't know, that you'll never hear again.
Great advice. You run out of 3 sentences, I hear.
that was still like 10 sentences.
Right. If you, technical wise, how long? Who are the right customers to pick for the interview?
Yes.
And like format, do you transcribe it? How do you process the results?
Yeah. So I'm so glad you asked these things. I'm actually working with a client to train their internal team on how to do everything you just described. So the first question you want to ask before you're going to interview customers is, what information do we want to learn? Because each segment of your user base will give you different information. So if you want to learn about who your ideal user is, you want to interview the people who are already paying you and who have achieved success with your product, however you define success. If you want to learn who your not a very good fit customers are, you would want to look at people who purchased and then churned, or who went into the trial but never paid. You don't want to try to get feature ideas or product development ideas from people who are not paying you. And you as a designer probably know that as well, because then what you do is build things for people who aren't willing to pay for them.
It's just that it sounds easier on paper than it is in real life to filter that out.
So much so. Yes. All of these things sound simple, but simple and easy are not the same at all. It sounds simple to go run 3 miles, but running is terrible. So
yeah, that's a good example.
Yeah. It's hard even if it's simple. So first you want to identify what information do we want? Do we want to know about our best customers? Do we want to know who isn't a good fit? Do we want to learn what drives people to not only sign up but also pay, in which case we'll want to talk to people who just signed up instead of people who signed up 2 years ago. So the first thing is decide what information you want to get. And I should write a much longer blog post about this so that someone can take it to work and like work through it step by step.
It could be like a paid guide or something like that.
Yeah, because I'm trying to cram it in here and I know that I'm probably being a little bit overwhelming. So decide on that.
It's super helpful. Keep on.
And then what you can plan on is getting about 80 to 90% of the information you need from 10 interviews per segment. So if I wanted to learn about my... actually, I'll use Calendly as an example. Calendly has about 6 or 7 types of users or user segments. And if I wanted to learn a lot about one of those, I would need to interview about 10 people in that segment. And that would give me about 80 to 90% of the insights that I'm looking for, which is a good amount to work with. When you're reaching out to people to interview them, some people think that's really fun and cool, and others are busy, and they really don't have time, even if they love your product. So plan to reach out to many more people than you plan to actually speak with, because you can expect maybe 25 to 30% of people that you reach out to actually say yes and show up. So plan on reaching out to lots and hearing back from about a quarter. And then once you're actually on calls with people, record everything. So Zencastr, I notice you're using for this podcast. I've used Skype call recorder. I've used Zoom. But absolutely don't try to hold an interview and take notes. Because if you're taking notes, you're missing out on some of the little details that your user is telling you. And you're missing out on the actual words that they use. Those are going to get lost if you have to put them into shorthand. So record everything and just hold it like a conversation. And then get that conversation transcribed. I believe one of your past podcast guests recommended rev.com as a good place to get interviews transcribed, which I also use pretty much every day. So rev.com is a transcription service, and it's very cheap for the value. It's about, I think it's $1 per minute, and you typically get your transcripts back within the next like 7 to 10 hours. So I would go through all of those steps. And then once you're done with that, you'll have this nice healthy pile of interview transcripts that you can read through. And you can highlight the patterns you start to see. Maybe you notice that 5 different people or 6 different people referred to or described your product using this certain word. Then you know, like, oh, this is a word that we want to start incorporating into some of our copy when we're describing the product. That's something that we can test against our old copy to see if it resonates better. You may notice a lot of people expressing the same fears before they sign up. Maybe several people were afraid that your product wouldn't do a certain job or it wouldn't do it well. Now you know that you need to speak to that. And before and on your landing page, you need to reassure people, hey, we do this thing really well. You can trust us for these reasons. So I realize I'm starting to ramble and maybe I should wrap up. but for the interview process, those are, I think, some of the more technical details that you can incorporate. But also for those who are listening and have questions about this, if you do end up signing up for my list and you have questions, I want people to know that if you jump on my list and you want to ask me a question related to these things, I respond directly to those who have these issues or who have these concerns or confusions. So that's probably the next best place to get more information.
Sounds great. Next topic now, landing pages. Mm-hmm. I know there is a like a culture and tradition of long form sales copy that's been like popular among our audience mm-hmm. over the last few years. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there are like huge behemoth software companies like Dropbox who don't have a single thing on their landing page, just right. like a motto and a couple of pictures. Right. And I think Calendly had a pretty minimalist landing page for a while. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you had a very inspiring headline, but I don't remember lines and lines of copy on there.
Very true.
Your take on that.
Yeah. So I would say it's impossible to say one type of landing page is better than the other. And you are right. So the Calendly landing pages are quite minimal. Before I left, we had this. I was running this big project in which we were redoing the website, and the one like I'm sad. This is the one reason I'm sad that I left when I did, because I never got to bring that project to life. So got all these pages of copy that never saw the light of day. It's heartbreaking, but.
Sorry.
Oh no, it's okay.
No, it hurts.
And you know how that feels, like you. You put your work into something and then it doesn't get published or launched and you're like, but when you're working on a landing page, and I will specify, let's define landing page versus homepage. So your homepage is the main page of your website. And what's difficult about homepages, is that so many different kinds of people show up there, and it's kind of like the front desk. Everyone has a different place that they're trying to get to. And so those are much trickier to write. With a landing page, a landing page is defined as something that people arrive at once they've clicked on an ad. Or maybe once they have gone through an email drip that you are sending out. And so you can target a landing page much more sharply to one type of person. So when it comes to long form heavy copy pages versus short form pages, what you want to pay attention to is how aware your user is of your product and how motivated they are to buy. And what I mean by that is that there are several stages of awareness that a person can be in before they do whatever it is that you want them to do on the page. So the lowest stage of awareness is not aware at all. So can we use Tiny Reminder as a quick example?
Oh, I'd love to.
Great.
Sure.
Okay. So you built Tiny Reminder to solve a problem that many consultants and freelancers and independent entrepreneurs have, which is you spend so much time emailing clients. Is that right?
Exactly.
So before I left Calendly to do this, I would have been totally unaware that that's even a problem that people have, because I had never had to deal with the problem. So I would have been on the lowest level of awareness. The next level is pain aware, and that would have been me just a couple months ago, 2 months ago, when I started to realize, oh my God, I spend so much time in emails trying to get invoices and trying to get content from people, trying to get a logo from someone. This is really painful, and it's wasting a lot of my time. That's when I would have been aware that I had a problem, but I didn't know there was anything out there to fix it. So the next level is solution aware. And when I'm solution aware, that's when I know that there are things out there like Tiny Reminder. I don't know if there are any that are exactly like it, but Once I'm in that stage, I know that there are a couple of ways that I can streamline processes. So maybe it's that I know about Trello or I know about Asana, and I'm trying to figure out what tools do I need to use to cut down on email. And then we're getting a little bit higher, and we're at product aware. That's when I know what Tiny Reminder is, but I don't know yet if it's right for me. And then the highest level is I guess most aware, the most aware level is when I know about Tiny Reminder and I know it's for people like me. And now I just have to be convinced that it's worth the money or it's worth my time to sign up. So The reason that I'm going on and on about these levels is that the lower your ideal user is or your visitor is in awareness, the more copy you need to help educate them about why your product is good for them. The higher aware they are, the less you have to educate them, because the more educated they already are themselves. And so when it comes to a long form page and lots of copy, those pages are typically reserved for people who are very low on that level of awareness scale. And I'll have to find, and I can send them to you. I made a presentation about this that gives examples of long form pages versus short form pages.
Wow. Yeah, that would be precious.
Yeah, I will definitely send that to you. And so neither one is right. What will determine whether you need a long or a short form page is who you want to speak to. Are you trying to speak to someone who's very low on that scale? Or are you trying to speak to someone who's very motivated to buy and who already knows about you? And all you need to do is give them somewhere to click and get out of their way. So that's how I would look at whether or not to use them. And the way that you find out what level of awareness people are at is by doing that customer research and by doing some other things, like figuring out what are the search terms people use when they arrive at this landing page. And are those search terms that someone would use when they're very, very low on the scale or very, very high on the scale? But again, I will send you all of this so that there's some examples to make it a little bit clearer. I know it's kind of hard to process if you're just listening.
So if I understand right, Dropbox, Basecamp, and Calendly might be great examples of, well, not landing pages, but home pages done right, because the awareness level is super high. People know about them when they land there.
Right, right. And the rules are sometimes different for home pages. Like, and I say sometimes, the rules are tough for home pages, because what you want to focus on is, number one, the people who could potentially become your customer. But you have all these other types of people coming there as well. You have, you know, people who want to write about the product on their blog. You have, you know, potential investors. You have people checking to see if you're hiring. And so all those different people can kind of cloud what message you need to really convey. But I would say for the most part, Basecamp, I'm glad you mentioned Basecamp. Basecamp is, in my opinion, and opinions don't mean anything. You have to test them. But I think Basecamp does the best job of helping someone at any stage of that awareness, funnel. I think they do the best job of guiding you in, no matter who you are, because they meet you by talking about how painful your life is right now, and then they guide you into, here is what Basecamp is and how it can make your life better. Now, Calendly did just release a new homepage that does something similar. If you look up the illustration that's at the top of the page, it's designed to do that same thing that Basecamp is doing, where it's agitating that pain. And that's good, because that speaks to people who are lower aware. You know, maybe they don't know about Calendly yet, but they know that it solves this painful problem of sending emails back and forth. But people who are more higher aware will still feel that pain as well. So Basecamp and Calendly's new illustration both do a good job of attracting or resonating with lots of people who are all along that spectrum of awareness. No, there's no need for the I think that's the end of the sentence.
Next one. Onboarding users.
Mm-hmm.
I thought when I started Tiny Reminder that the biggest problem would be to get people in the door. But I'm amazed at how low the activation and engagement, or whatever term you use, is when they sign up. I was amazed. Like, they did sign up. Obviously, they do have a pain. Why don't they use it?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've read a lot about onboarding, and Samuel Hulick's great book.
Oh, yes.
And Groove series about how, you know, best onboarding sequences are questioning the customers. Yeah, I'm fine with sending, like, open questions to them. But still, what other dozen of emails needs to contain so that they finally engage with the app?
Right. So I'm so glad you brought that up. And it's funny. So for those listening, I signed up for Tiny Reminder about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And once I got in, I had all these fears. I didn't know what to do. And so I took a screencast and I was like, "Hi, Jane, here's where I'm confused. Please help me." And you can assume, if you've built something, that all of your users feel that way when they get in. They don't quite know what to do. And so these may sound, you may hear these and think, well, duh. But it sounds simple, but it's always harder in real life. But what do you want to do when you're planning your onboarding flow? Start at the very, very end where you want people to be. And you want to identify what action determines that someone has had success. Like, what is that magic moment? You've talked about the aha moment in onboarding where someone gets it. They understand the value. The first thing you want to do is predict what you think that aha moment is going to be. And
do you think it's understanding the value, or is it immediate? Or is it receiving the value from the counter agent?
Right. So you know what I could do is actually use Calendly's flow as an example. So what we found through a lot of customer research is that the first time people felt value from the product was not, you know, setting up their profile, adding a picture, like setting their schedule. That didn't help them feel like they were getting value. When they finally went, aha, this is valuable, is when they shared their link and someone scheduled a meeting with them and it took 2 seconds. That was when people thought, oh wow, this is life changing. This will save me so much time. I want to keep using this. And so knowing that, we were able to work backwards to figure out, okay, what do we have to convince people to do step by step to get them to experience that magic moment? And so that's what informed us. So we knew, for example, that we had to teach people how to share their link, because if you don't share your Calendly link, no one can schedule with you. So before that, we had to think, okay, well, before someone shares their link, is there anything they need to do? Well, they need to connect their calendar, so we should make sure that they do that. And then we actually, in a product update, we actually made calendar connection automatic, so that people had fewer steps to the magic moment. We want to make sure that their time zone is correct, and so we tried to gut. In the very, very early days, we tried to use the onboarding flow to guide people to take these little steps to get them to schedule. So they had to connect their calendar, set their time zone, set their availability, and then share their link. And as the months and years went on, we automated a lot of that so that people didn't have to do that work, and they got closer to the magic moment more quickly, which reduced the chance that they would never actually get there, and that they would say, this never worked out for me. And when I signed up for Tiny Reminder, I was like, okay, what do I have to do? What has to happen for me to feel that, oh my goodness, this, I did it. Like, this is valuable. And what I found was I felt that value once I sent out a Tiny Reminder and someone paid me within an hour. And I was like, oh, it works. But there were these little steps in the way of that moment. So, for example, I didn't know a couple of terms confused me and made me scared that I was going to use it wrong. And there were a couple, like, I was afraid, for example, that I would accidentally send a reminder to my client before I was ready to. And it would make me look unprofessional. And so that's actually why I took that screencast, because I would love to see how other people act when they first get in the app, and what the most important steps are to getting someone to actually send a Tiny Reminder. and what could be automated so that they don't have to do as much work to send it. I'm starting to ramble, but if I wrap this up and turn it into a series of takeaways, I think what you could say here is when it comes to onboarding flows, number one, identify what that aha moment is for your users. Number two, from there, work backwards all the way to sign up and list out the most important things they have to do to reach that moment. And number three, figure out what you can automate so they have fewer steps. And number four, when you're planning your emails to them or when you're planning messages inside your app, make sure each message helps them take one of those little steps at a time. So like breadcrumbs, you're guiding them to the right moment. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's precious. Thank you so much. Next question, so that we fit one more. So I have traction and growth, and they are kind of, well, I'm probably more interested in traction right now.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a very small number of users and you are not Steve Jobs,
right,
and you don't have a mailing list of 1,000 people who you can sell it to like immediately, what are your baby steps of getting that initial traction?
Oh my goodness. So this could be a whole podcast.
I know. Sorry.
No. No apologies needed at all. It's impossible to say these are the three marketing channels that work for everyone, because every product is different. Every price point is different. Every user base has different needs and perceptions. And so more than certain marketing channels like advertising or, guest blog posts or going to conferences, more than channels, what's really, really, really important for traction is having a set process for testing different types of marketing you think will work well for tiny little sprints. So I will send you a link to a fantastic Sumo article about this with lots of resources in it. But when you're looking for traction, have you actually read the book Traction by chance?
I have it on my shelf.
Great.
I purchased it or downloaded, but I think I read like an overview of it and maybe a couple chapters.
Sure. So
too bad.
And that's all. That's enough for this conversation. So in the book Traction, the authors lay out 19 different channels of marketing that you can experiment with, and the way mm-hmm. that they advise you start getting traction is by identifying 2 to 3 that you think will work for your product, and testing them for maybe 2 to 3 months. And based on those little 2 to 3 month tests, getting rid of the ones that aren't working and putting all your effort into the ones that are working. And then once you have a winner, then you can start using that more long term. And as that winning channel is running, then you test another 2 or 3 and you see which of those work well. And so the reason this could be such a long conversation is that each of those channels is so complex. For example, the channel of paid advertising encompasses AdWords, Facebook ads, Twitter ads, LinkedIn ads, and each of those is different and nuanced. And so to stay really high level, I have to cut out a lot of information. But when it comes to gaining traction early on, what's very, very important is working with someone who has a set process in place for running those short little tests. And ideally you want someone who who doesn't have a problem saying, "Hey, we tested 3 channels and none of them worked. I'm sorry, we have to move on." And that can be really hard because that takes a lot of humility, and it takes, if you're working with a marketer, you have to be willing, like that marketer has to be willing to say, "Hey, we did all this work and it didn't work out. And I'm sorry, let's move on." And as humans, we want what we're doing to work. So it's a very, very challenging thing, which is why people continue to struggle with it. And, and share their struggles across forums and in blog posts.
I hear you.
Yeah.
So it's about experimentation and consistency, and tracking the results is the most important one, I guess.
Right. And I think the best thing to do, rather than say, here are all the answers, is to share a couple of resources to help people start to understand what those tests should look like and how long they should run them. So I will share those with you afterward.
So Claire, as we're wrapping this up, you mentioned a few great companies, for example, Basecamp as an example of a nice homepage that refers to people. And we covered other topics. Could you give us, examples of software businesses that do great? For example, people who do onboarding great and ones who do content marketing great.
Oh, absolutely. So let's start with the onboarding process. There are two pieces of onboarding. There's what's happening inside the app, and then there are also the emails that are being sent to you as a new user. And those have to work together to get you to that aha moment. And I would say BidSketch, the proposal software platform, has one of my favorite onboarding email sequences. So what Ruben, the founder, has done is put a tiny little action item in every email that you receive as a new BidSketch user. And if you follow those action items, you become really good at the product. And so for those who are struggling with writing onboarding emails that are valuable, Ruben and BidSketch's onboarding emails are a great, great example to start with. And then content. So in content, are we talking about like landing pages, or are we talking about other types of content?
We can do both. We can do both. Yeah, well, landing page, great example, and a great example of company who does like kills content marketing.
So Drift, the messaging app. I have a huge crush on their content marketing strategy. Not on any one particular person, but the strategy. So they have done a wonderful job of taking something that's pretty boring. A messaging app is not sexy. Most software is not sexy, actually. And they have made it very human. And they have also done an amazing job of putting themselves in their customers' shoes. So, for example, all of their entire approach is actually based on, would we enjoy this as potential users? And would we want to engage with this? And how would we want to engage with it? They did some really non-traditional things in the marketing world. They removed all forms from their content. So you don't have to fill out any forms or get on any email lists in order to download or digest what they write. So signing up for their list is completely voluntary. And they've done that in a really beautiful way. So I would recommend their reading through their blog, reading the books they've published. They do a great job with content. And then landing pages are, it's tough because I have to do a lot more work to go out, and you have to do more work to find them because they're usually tied to an advertisement or an email marketing campaign. So they're not in the wild as much.
Right.
So I'd have to think through that one. I would say a good example of a long form landing page, and this will actually be in the presentation that I send to you as a resource. A good example of a long form landing page is a certain landing page that Unbounce uses to convince people who clicked on an AdWords campaign to sign up for their product. And it's long form because the words that I found this landing page by typing I typed what is a landing page into Google. And that's a very low level awareness statement. Because if I don't know what a landing page is, then someone can't really sell to me yet. First, they had to educate me on why landing page software is helpful and how it could change my life and how hard my life is without it. So Unbounce has a great long form page that educates me on all that stuff and gets me interested in their product before promoting themselves. So I'll share, again, in that presentation that I share, you'll see kind of how I break that down. But they do a wonderful job at both the long form and the short form landing pages, which makes sense because they're landing page software, so they have to do it well.
Exactly. One question I forgot to ask when we were talking about marketing channels. What were the winning marketing channels for Calendly when you grew it?
Mm-hmm. So honestly, the main, like our biggest driver of growth was the product itself. And that was intentional. And I can talk a little bit about how we made those decisions. So please do.
Let's go over time. That's amazing. I'm all ears.
Okay, if that's okay with you. So as I mentioned very briefly earlier, and for those who have not used Calendly, the way that it works is you have a calendar. You know, your calendar may be Google Calendar, Office 365, Outlook, whatever. You sign up for Calendly, and Calendly looks at when you are free on your calendar and when you are not, and it shows people that you would like to schedule with you only the times that you are free to meet. And so you have this control of when people can book time with you, and someone can very easily see your free times, book themselves into it, and you skip all of the back and forth of, are you free Tuesday? Well, no, I'm not free Tuesday. How's Wednesday? Well, I'm not free Wednesday. How's Thursday? So because you inherently have to share Calendly with someone else to get them to schedule with you, there is the very trendy term, there's a viral component to the software. And when someone who we call an invitee, someone you're inviting to schedule with you, sees that and they experience how quick it is, it was almost a way of guiding people who hadn't even become users to that magic moment. So they immediately felt, oh, wow, this saves so much time. I should sign up for this so that it saves me time too. So just having more, like the more people that we could convince to get into Calendly and to start scheduling with other people, the more marketing we had. So each user was a little marketer, if that makes sense. And so that was our biggest, that process was our biggest driver of signups by a long shot in those early days. And that once we realized that, what that did was inform what we put on the free plan and what we put on the paid plan. And I believe you talked to Tope about this a bit, but what we realized was that we have to make the experience for the invitee, the person that you're sending your link to, as perfect and easy as possible. Because if it's not, then you as the user will stop using Calendly because it's not working for you. People aren't booking. And so that was the reason that we decided to do things like make sure that there was no limit on the number of meetings that you could receive through Calendly. Because if you at some point were limited on the number of meetings that you could receive, then you would eventually stop using it after you had met that quota. It was the same reason that we decided to keep several other features free versus putting them on paid, because we wanted every single free user to continue using the product in order to bring in their network versus forcing people to pay in order to get value from the product. So with that being the biggest one, at the time that I was transitioning, we were looking into a couple of other things. One being really, really amping up our content marketing. So blogging specifically was a project that I was leading. And that now is up to the next director of marketing to really run. So it's actually fun. Calendly just brought on their new senior, I can't remember her exact title, director of marketing or senior marketing lead. But I'm excited to see where she takes it because she's working with an awesome product that you know, has value, and it'll be a fun challenge for her to figure out.
Okay, that answers my question in full, I guess. Well, that's great, because I hope that the same viral component is built into Tiny Reminder, and we've got endless battles with my friends, like whether and how powerful the free plan should be.
Mm-hmm, right.
And I'm saying,
right.
Like, but listen to Taupe, that's what he said. Like, listen to Claire, that's what she says.
And you and I could have a long conversation about that just for fun. Like, now I'm interviewing you. I would be so fascinated to know how you are determining what do we make free, what do we make paid, and so on and so on. Figuring that out is a very fun puzzle to solve.
Absolutely. Okay, but please tell people where they find your amazing writing online.
Thank you for the kind adjective. So everything that I publish comes out of a website called loveyourcustomers.co. So right now it's just a simple, wimpy little one-page website, but there are two different opt-in forms on there, and one of them offers you a quick worksheet that I created, and it's called Make Your Landing Page as Effective as a Demo. So if you sign up through that one, you'll get a free resource right off the bat. And I do read every single email that I get in response to the newsletters and the information that I share. So if you sign up there, you're signing up for real conversations with me, not just a bunch of blasts.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. Claire, thank you so much for joining us today. It was precious. And I think we covered like a triple dose of super useful topics. Thank you once again so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It'll be fun to comb through all this and find the actionable takeaways. I hope those show
Absolutely.
Up in the show notes.
Okay, thank you, Claire. Have a great day.
Thank you, Jane. Bye-bye.